A man with frontotemporal dementia suddenly falls in love with Italian pop music, the same mere noise he'd dismissed his entire life. His neurological condition rewired his aesthetic preferences overnight. If brain chemistry can transform our tastes so dramatically, how much do any of us truly understand about what we like and why? This question haunts our age of algorithmic recommendations, where Netflix suggests your next binge and Spotify curates your soundtrack. We've become accustomed to machines predicting our desires, yet the machinery of preference formation remains far more mysterious than the algorithms designed to exploit it. Our tastes appear deceptively straightforward, but prove maddeningly complex upon examination. They're categorical, loving blue everywhere except on cars, contextual, red pants acceptable in Madrid but mortifying in Manhattan, and constructed, we invent reasons after choosing. Rarely are they truly inherited. Children seldom share parental preferences despite identical genetics. Bottle-fed Germans unconsciously prefer ketchup containing vanillin found in infant formula, while breast-fed Germans favor regular ketchup. Neither group has any idea why. We labor under an illusion of authenticity, convinced we understand our preferences when we're often strangers to our own desires. Expert violinists, tested blindly, typically prefer new instruments to supposedly superior Stradivarius violins. Much of our preference behavior occurs in what psychologist Timothy Wilson calls the adaptive unconscious, yet we construct elaborate post-hoc explanations for feelings that seem authentically ours. Like Woody Allen's character strategically arranging intellectual books before a date, we perform our tastes as much for ourselves as for others. Netflix discovered a striking truth. People are terrible judges of their own preferences. Despite perfecting star-based ratings, watching patterns revealed the real story. Todd Yellen, Netflix's VP of Product Innovation, explains they de-emphasized ratings predictions, despite having gotten more people to hit stars than anyone in the universe. People rate documentaries like An Inconvenient Truth highly, but leave them unwatched, while giving superhero films lower ratings despite watching them repeatedly. This self-deception runs deep. Sociologist Irving Goffman called this maintaining a proper performance. We curate our taste identities like Instagram feeds, projecting aspirational rather than actual preferences. Anthropologist Robert Trivers suggests self-deception evolved as an offensive strategy for deceiving others. We convince ourselves first to better convince others. When algorithms track actual behavior, they often know us better than we know ourselves. Restaurant meals engage all senses: taste, smell, texture, appearance, and sound. Research shows amplifying potato chip crunch makes them seem fresher, yet most taste actually comes through our nose. Try the jelly bean test. Holding your nose, all flavors taste merely sweet, but releasing it floods your senses with distinct flavors. While tongues detect only basic tastes, sweet, sour, bitter, salty, umami, all finer distinctions arrive retronasally through the nasal passage. Our sensory inputs dramatically alter perception. Deeper colored juice tastes better, despite identical flavor. Bluish light turns delicious steak nauseating. When choosing from menus, we're anticipating pleasure, not experiencing it. Words like warm, heritage, and artisanal function as mental appetizers. Expectations shape everything. In the infamous salmon ice cream experiment, participants called it disgusting when labeled ice cream, but enjoyed it as frozen savory mousse. When identical soup was served in bowls versus glasses labeled dental liquid diet, preferences flipped based solely on labeling. This explains why menus now explicitly announce salt in desserts, allowing diners to appreciate the contrast rather than perceive something wrong. Quantifying taste is remarkably challenging. The 9-point hedonic scale, developed in 1944 for military rations, remains the industry standard despite profound limitations. People rarely use extreme values and hedge ratings in case something better appears next. Paradoxically, most liked items in initial tests often become least liked after repeated exposure. We protect enjoyment of favorites by choosing variety, what researcher Howard Moskowitz calls avoiding death by hamburger. Yet bland foods induce less fatigue than flavorful ones, possibly because they fade from memory more quickly. Context dramatically affects enjoyment. Military rations rated acceptable were consumed more by MIT students than soldiers in Hawaii, demonstrating environment's impact on appetite. Restaurant decor, music, tableware weight, plate color, and wait times all influence experience. Like Miles drinking fine wine from a styrofoam cup in Sideways, context can undermine even exceptional experiences, reminding us that pleasure isn't just what we consume, but where, when, how, and with whom. Cornell researchers created algorithms detecting fake reviews with 90% accuracy, better than humans who suffer from truth bias. Fabricated reviews contain fewer contextual details, more superlatives, and shorter length, since lying requires mental effort. Liars use more verbs than nouns and fewer personal pronouns to distance themselves, except in fake positive reviews where they overcompensate with self-references to appear credible. Legitimate reviews suffer numerous distortions. Only 5% of customers write reviews, creating a biased sample trending toward extremes, the brag and moan phenomenon. Despite this, strong positivity bias persists. Goodreads averages 3.8 out of 5 stars, TripAdvisor 3.7. MIT research showed artificially seeding a positive first vote created a cascade boosting scores by 25%. This social dimension reflects our fundamentally imitative nature. As French sociologist Gabriel Tarde noted in 1890, the social being, in the degree that he is social, is essentially imitative. We face the paradox of conformist distinction, simultaneously wanting to belong while maintaining individual identity. When Stanford researchers sold Livestrong wristbands to a geeky dorm, wearers in the Target dorm abandoned them by 32%. Our preferences serve as tribal markers, signaling group membership more than authentic taste. In the Berkshire's forests, chestnut-sided warblers completely changed their song repertoire over just 7 years, not through innovation, but through accumulated imitation errors. This reveals how randomness shapes cultural evolution. Guitar distortion emerged from equipment malfunctions. Dog breed popularity shifts inexplicably. Many taste changes follow the neutral model. Popularity shifts through random copying, not inherent superiority. Baby names evolved from tradition-bound choices to fashion statements in the late 19th century. Through the ratchet effect, small mutations, Jenny to Jenna, gradually expand until reaching ridiculousness, echoing Raymond Loewy's most advanced yet acceptable design principle. The internet promised to democratize taste, but instead concentrated popularity. Hit songs now command larger market shares, creating snowball smashes with unprecedented staying power. This reflects double jeopardy. Less popular items are both less known and less chosen by those aware of them. When people see others' choices, popularity becomes more unpredictable and unequal. Social influence creates steeper hierarchies rather than flattening them. Our preferences are riddled with unconscious biases and easily swayed by context and social influences. We often can't predict what we'll like tomorrow or remember why we liked something yesterday. Yet patterns emerge. We know what we like before we know why, in milliseconds. Our likes are often influenced by context or expectation rather than authentic preference. We like things more when they can be categorized, and we should be wary of the easy like that provides immediate but fleeting pleasure. Three tensions explain much of our taste: novelty versus familiarity, conformity versus distinction, and simplicity versus complexity. The most profound insight? Taste isn't fixed. It's an ongoing negotiation between our biology, psychology, social context, and cultural environment. When asked about his favorite beer, Judge Brad Krause wisely replied, "I don't have a favorite beer. I usually say it's the one in my hand." In an age where algorithms claim to predict our desires, acknowledging the beautiful mystery of not quite knowing what we'll love next becomes radical. That uncertainty isn't a bug. It's what makes us gloriously, unpredictably human.